You're listening to Sounds Good on WKMS. I'm Todd Hatton with Kate Lochte and Kim Trevathan. Third time is the charm.
Hello, Kim.
Hello, Kate.
There you are. Listen, you could get over the Clarks River today, I believe. We've had quite the rain here, and the Clarks River was out over its banks on 94 East more than I've seen it since I've been here.
Yeah, I heard that, and of course that presents other problems when it gets that high.
Yes, indeed. One time the water main broke, but that's neither here nor there. Kim Trevathan is signing books this Friday. What time, Kim?
From 11 till 3 at the Murray State Bookstore.
Okay, so you're going to be signing this new book of yours about liminal zones and finding them. And, I looked up liminal because it's a slippery word for me, and it's the word threshold comes up, and that's what you did. You were in a kayak, and you went up rivers that had been dammed looking for where they were still wild. Is that right?
That's correct, yes. And at first I call these transitional zones, of course, because I was transitioning from a lake that had been dammed to where the river comes in, and going from an artificially created waterway to something that's natural and moving and alive. And I chose the word liminal just because it had a little more resonance in terms of a threshold, like you said, they've also used it in anthropology to refer to a passage in life. So a lot of these places were really transcendent and spiritual in ways that I didn't really anticipate. So that's why I went with that term liminal.
Kim, in addition to the spirituality, I found myself being scared with you almost all the way through the book. Just driving around, and you're clearly a seasoned water person and national park user, but I think it was the Edisto where you were always thinking you'd see an alligator because there were alligators. And Hematite Lake, tell the story of doing Hematite Lake at night, because it was really scary.
Yeah, toward the end of these quests, I started doing things that were a little unusual. Like I started paddling at night, which a lot of people probably do. And it's really nice in the summertime because it's cool and there's not much boat traffic. But I went to Hematite because I really have a personal history. It's in the land between the lakes, and that's really one of my first experiences fishing, when my father took me there. So, in a way, this was a really familiar lake, and energy, too. Energy was even spookier, which is also in land between the lakes.
Maybe I got them mixed up. Maybe it's the Energy Lake story that's the – if you recall that as the scarier, go there because –
Okay. Yeah, Energy, I went on the 4th of July weekend. I went on the 4th of July that night and started after midnight, and there was a really full moon that set right before I put in, so it was really dark there. And once I got up toward the creek that comes into Energy and feeds Energy, this really thick fog was rising up, and so I was just sort of paddling blind through there, and it's a really extensive swamp there. Long Creek comes into there, I'd done it in the daytime, and so I kind of knew what was back there, but there was a big X of cross trees which marked this passageway that went through there, and it took me forever to find it. And it's just amazing how your senses are really heightened at night when you're in the water and, you're alone. So your imagination kind of works on you.
That's when the deer was there and not happy to see you, sort of. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I saw the deer in the daytime. And actually what turned me around at night was a skunk. I smelled a skunk, and I thought, well, that's a pretty good sign to turn around. But what else? I don't know what else was out there. I heard a lot of noise, lots of trees, lots of frogs, and a heron startled. But who knows what was out there? Lots of different sounds at night.
It was really spooky to go with you on that ride. Also, the Rogue River ride. Tell the story of the Rogue.
Well, some of these chapters are things I'm showing what not to do, and that's a pretty good example. I thought I'd go downriver, put in below a dam and go downriver on the Rogue, which is in Oregon. I saw a lot of people having fun out there in these inflatable rafts, and I thought, well, surely I can make a little trip myself, two or three miles, and say I paddled the Rogue River. So I put in, and I decided not to put the spray skirt on my kayak, which is basically sort of a hybrid, good for Class 2 water. And I found out pretty quickly after I put in that I was in above my head, so to speak. I was hitting some really big waves and taking on water, and I had a chance to pull out after I went backward through this one passage. My kayak was half full of water, but I thought, I'll just go a little bit further. And that's when it filled up again, and I took about a 200-yard swim, held onto the kayak, and I got to the point of this island and was able to, stop myself with my kayak, but I lost the paddle. So basically, I was stranded on this island without a paddle. I had a boat, and both sides, the water was really cold, and I did not want to swim. Both sides were pretty rough passages, and there were people going past me in these little inflatable rafts and so forth, and inner tubes, with no problem. And I finally, I don't know, out of desperation, I guess, I ended up making a paddle out of a stick and some willow branches and a couple of pieces of driftwood, and I made it to the shore. And this guy gave me a ride back to my car, and I said, man, it was kind of embarrassing out there with all these kids going past. And he said, well, it happens every weekend. Somebody gets stranded on this river, and I have to give them a ride back to their car. He said, don't worry about it. But I was so deathly afraid that I'd have to have the rescue squad or somebody come get me out there, because nobody could stop on the point of this island on purpose. I just had to stop there out of necessity.
Well, you do this seeking and searching, but you also integrate it into the college courses you teach. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I teach a couple different classes that directly play into this kind of thing, and one of them is a creative nonfiction class where students I have a couple assignments where they write. They can write about a sense of place, or write about places that have affected them in a strong way. And travel narratives become a part of that course as well. So I integrate it into that course, and I also have a January term course. It's a 3-week course where we get 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, and I take them hiking and we go to different places and write about the landscape and basically do nature writing. So I can kind of use my own work as examples in those classes.
Are you planning a trip with your new companion, Jasper?
Well, Jasper's a dog that went with me on the Tennessee River, and he's kind of the reason I started on these quests.
Oh, that's right. Jasper passed, and you have Norm. I'm sorry. It's Norm.
Yeah, Norman's doing pretty well now. We just went up and camped in a wilderness area called Slick Rock Creek, and we also canoed on Memorial Day weekend on Teleco Lake, and he did great. He's pretty much passed all the tests that Jasper did, except he hadn't been on a 6-week excursion. But yeah, he's been a great dog companion, and he's actually in the book too in later chapters.
Yeah. I just got him mixed up. Like, I got hematite and energy mixed up. I'm sorry about that. But describe Jasper.
Okay.
He's big.
Yeah, Norman.
Not Jasper.
Is a German
Norm.
Shepherd.
Yeah. Woof.
Yeah, Norman's a German Shepherd. Yeah, he's 85 pounds, and we adopted him from a shelter when he was about 5 years old, and he was a little skittish at the time, and he still is a little bit. He you know, he'll get excited about other dogs and that kind of thing. So that kind of adds an extra challenge in the canoe. It definitely, if he wanted to get out, I'd have to go out with him. And so far, he's wanted to stay. He doesn't like the water much. I mean, he can swim, but he just doesn't like the water. But he's been a good dog. Great in camp too. He's watches for bears and that kind of stuff. So
Norm and Jasper both seem to have been intelligent friends.
Yeah. Jasper was really one of those dogs who was sort of had an uncanny ability to know what to do. And certain, I mean, he locked through 9 dams, no incidents on the Tennessee River, and I don't know, it was just something about him that was unusual in a dog. And Norm's the same way. He's very charismatic. People love him, and they respond to his looks. He's a good looking dog, good looking German Shepherd, and really friendly as well.
Well, the book is full of adventure. It's kind of really scary in parts, thoughtful in other parts, but action-packed, and we thank you for speaking with us today. Again, we're speaking with Kim Trevathan. His third book about the waterways, Liminal Zones, is available now at Amazon.com, and Kim will be at Murray State University Bookstore this Friday from 11 to 2, signing Liminal Zones. Thank you.
Thank you.